extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I'm Andrew Reeby with my partners in soccer, David Goss, the pantomime, Charlie Davies. What's up, boys? You're really getting into it there. I was like, I having a lot of trouble concentrating. Couldn't look at the screen as you did whatever the hell it was you were doing there. If you're watching on YouTube,
and,
you understand.
And you
on
think podcasts, you're ready?
This is terrible radio.
You think you're ready for the next level? If you can't take that, two of us?
No,
we're trying to pump you up too. We're
yeah,
trying to pump you up.
I can't. Yeah, I'm struggling here. I just can't even look at you. Like,
where's
just all
energy?
The energy?
I've got scouts calling me all over the place saying, "Is Andrew Reeby ready for the next level?"
I just don't know. I just met with one in my living room.
Wow.
He just challenged me. Just everything is happening so quickly here. By the way, speaking of scouts, we have a big show coming up. We'll get to that in a little bit. CCL, all the other things. You know what we're talking about here. El Trafico. Maybe it's my imagination. You tell me if I'm right or if I'm wrong here. Twitter Spaces, maybe it was like a dream. I saw and I heard Bobby Warshaw on MLS Today. Imagine that. Bobby Warshaw. On MLS Today, is this true or false, Dave?
I can tell you this.
It's a mirage.
Unequivocally.
It's a myth.
When the dream becomes a reality, that's what just happened.
Whoa.
It was a dream. It is true. Bobby Warshaw
is coming to
Frisco, baby.
Whoa. The promised land where he belonged.
As he worded it.
It felt like a dream. It didn't seem like reality, but he's back.
As he worded it, it's his favorite holiday of the year. Generation Adidas Cup is next week in Frisco. It's the premier youth soccer tournament in all of North America. U15s, U17s. We'll be calling the whole thing. I am extremely excited
Who are the favorites, Goss, for the U15s, and who are the favorites for the 17s?
The 15s, you have LAFC, are a really good group again. The Colorado Rapids are pretty competitive. Two teams that have obviously started to sign a ton of homegrowns. RSL is really good at the 17 level. They have a 14-year-old striker, Charlie, who's already on a pro contract in Axel Kai. He won the Golden Boot last year at the U15 level, playing up. Now he's playing with the 17, so a man of your own heart. And Philly, as you'd expect, Philadelphia Union, CJ Olney, Barjong Darbo, Luke Zielinski. We're talking ballers right here. So Philly will be up there as well.
Reel it off. Let's go. One thing I'll have to, just a little feedback for Bobby. You can pass it along to him if you'd like. I really need a press release next time. You know, like Jordan did the thing when he came back and it was just a quote. It was like, "I'm back." I need that from Bobby next time. But on the other side, have you started your honey and tea regimen?
Because I
imagine your throat. I'm surprised you even agreed to come on this show.
We start on Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern time. We have four games a day all the way from Saturday through Friday. Then we've got three sets of quarterfinals and semifinals on Friday and Saturday, and then the one final on Sunday. So I am loosening it up, getting all the juices flowing. But this is what I live for, man. This is what I save it for. This is my World Cup. So just so you know, after this, you're going to be getting the like shadow version of me, but going into it, you're getting Vela pre-contract.
Right. I thought you were going to say like, you're going to get me like the Instagram posts on the beach. Like, where did Dave go? Like, he's gone for 2 weeks. We might have to put you on a minutes limit for this podcast. Just want to make sure you're at full strength. Little Raul Ruiz Diaz, you know, 60 minutes will take you off. Doesn't matter the game state, TBD, how many minutes Anders lets us go on this one. Where do we watch, just to remind people, GA Cup?
MLSsoccer.com and on Twitch. So if you want to talk to us, you want to chat with us a little bit, you can watch and follow it all on MLSsoccer.com. We got Travis Clark coming down, who's obviously youth landscape legend, covering it all. So there will be large amount of coverage. MLS Today, we're going to do a couple special podcasts about scouting, selling players, the development pipeline, talking to Fred Lipka, who's in charge of it all for MLS as well. So for anyone who, I don't know, likes the idea that the U.S. is really good at soccer and Canada is really good at soccer because all these players came through the academy setup.
Just want to know what the future is looking like.
Exactly.
2026 is only 4 years away.
Let me give you this. The last GA Cup I was at, Tavon Gray was on the field for NYCFC. And last June, When I was at MLS Next Cup, Obed Vargas was on the field for Seattle Sounders, and now they're both playing in CCL already. That's how quickly it happens.
You know, this is Obed Vargas Hive here. All right, tune in for that. It'll be David, the ghost of Bobby Warshaw, and innumerable others providing coverage from the GA Cup, MLSsoccer.com, and Twitch. Coming up today on Extra Time from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios, we got the CCL recap. Sounders 3-1 at home. They roll. Jordan Morris has a new haircut, and it seems like he might be back. Upsets in the Open Cup. MLS teams are about to enter in the third round. The final second-round games are tonight. We'll get the draw on Friday, but MLS teams will enter in the third round. 17 of them, I believe, and then the final 8 will come in the round after that, in the round of 32. In MLS, El Tráfico is Saturday on Big Fox. That's the first Chicharito-Vela matchup ever in MLS. But there's no contract right now for Mr. Charlie Candle. We'll talk about that. It continues to be big news. Devastating news, by the way, in Atlanta, just after we published on Thursday. Joseph Martinez under evaluation. Ozzie Alonso with a season-ending injury, I believe, here. So should we be worried about Atlanta and about Joseph? And best to Ozzie. Brenner wants out of Cincinnati already. So that's interesting. We'll talk through that one. Doesn't sound like since you're going to let him go. And the Revs got their Matt Turner replacement. And Charlie will give us the lowdown on what's going on in New England. And finally, in the mailbag, Nations League draw and some World Cup look ahead. All right. Before we get into CCL, El Tráfico's coming up on Saturday. The call-up was in L.A. They talked to Chicharito, Julian Araujo, Maxime Crepeau, Kellen Acosta. That is the first part of their El Tráfico extravaganza. Listen wherever you listen to podcasts or on YouTube. Go check that out. And then next week they have a deep dive with Greg Vanney and Steve Cherundolo. So those ought to be really good too. So if you're interested in El Tráfico, you're going to watch the game, or you just want to hear from Chicharito, one of the most interesting people in our sport and our league, go check out the call-up. Always doing good work there. Okay, CCL recap. Dave, we have not heard from you. Charlie and I were on the watch-along show yesterday with Doyle and Kalen. That was a lot of fun. You know, we oftentimes do quote-unquote private Zooms for CCL matches and have the group chat roll through. We got a little punchy last night with various injuries, which we will talk about, as well as just the quality of this game. Sounders go up, NYCFC pull back, then Sounders get the final two. They win 3-1. They say they want to win the CCL. They want to make history. What did you make of this performance for Brian Schmetzer's team? Who stood out? What stood out?
Just Seattle being Seattle, but having all their weapons out there. I mean, this is a team that I thought it looked a lot like the Leon game in leg one, and I thought it was going to. NYCFC, they have a distinct style. They came out, I thought the first 10, 15 minutes, they possessed the ball, they played high up the field, and then you've just got Christian Roldan and Jordan Morris running through the lines. You've got Nico Ladero and everyone in that midfield, ability to thread a through ball, to be that second option, to create chances. And when you have all of these weapons on the field, you're then going to get the finishes at some point. And they had a ton of threats from set pieces. I thought Arriaga was going to get one for sure early in this game, and then felt like he did score. And then minutes later, you finally break through. And I think with this group, Rusnak doesn't have to score to be effective because he's so clean in possession. And there's so many other weapons out there he can set up. But it was obviously a big deal to see him get it, and it was a gorgeous goal. And then from the goal on, it felt like Seattle started to find their feet and were rolling a little bit more. But I came out of it thinking it should have been 5-3. Like, both these teams created a ton of opportunities. Both these teams were uber dangerous. No Maxi obviously hurt NYCFC, but not even that much. They still created chances. They were still dangerous. It still was shared amongst, it felt like, the front four. And then you had the wingbacks getting into it. So this was one of the most fun games I've watched in a really long time. And it felt like the moment. It felt like two great teams playing in a big competition with high stakes. And I don't know that we always get that in the world of sports. And so I thought it was a pretty special night.
It's nice to experience a CCL semifinal without just the deep, dark, foreboding pit of Liga MX dread. As well, where even when things are good, you have this, you know, you have that little thing under the surface that's telling you don't get too happy, don't get too excited, because it's going to be bad. When it's good, it's actually bad. That's been the CCL of the past. We got a little bit of a gift in this sense, in that we know an MLS team is going to go to the final, and we can delay the bad, knock on wood, until then, if it indeed comes. I hope that this is the year, but I've learned enough by now to be what's cautiously pessimistic, in Kalen's words. But this game, Charlie, it really delivered.
Yes,
and Jordan Morris really delivered. And that, along with Rui Diaz and Ladero being back, really sort of puts all eyes on Seattle. They have the inside track. There's a possibility they could get what they want, if we can just talk about whether it is what they want, to host the second leg at home, because Pumas beat Cruz Azul. And if you want to host the second leg, you have to finish with the most points in the knockout rounds and the best goal differential. Well, right now, Sounders on 11 points. If they go to Red Bull Arena next Wednesday, remember, Red Bull Arena, as the Sounders would like to remind you, and so would all NYCFC fans out there, or non-NYCFC fans. If they win that game, they'll host the second leg. This feels a little bit like their chance to make more history. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. What's at stake for the Sounders, and do you think they can get it done? Both NYCFC and then maybe be the favorites in the final, as the press in Mexico are saying right now.
Well, it's massive. They'd be the first club in Major League Soccer history to play in the Club World Cup. I mean, that is, there's no better promotion for the league to say, hey, the league is doing it now. They're the best. The MLS is producing the best club in North America to go out and compete versus the Champions League winners and the Asian Champions League winners and the South America winners. That is such a recognition, not only for Major League Soccer, but for the players and for the coaches and for the fans of the Seattle Sounders and in all honesty, the fans of Major League Soccer. It's one of those moments where we can all be proud of how far we've come as a league, and how far we've come with player development. And so I know we're not there yet.
Yep,
I am saying, a lot's at stake. You have the chance now to go to New York, and just have you could have a good result, a good performance. You don't have to play your best to move on to the final, and then you get a chance to host. And hosting is so important, and that's why I say, I think if they do win, they are going to be the firm favorites to go to the Club World Cup, because one, they're going to have that home game in the second leg, which is massive, because all the pressure is on that first team when you're playing at home, because you know you can't concede, you cannot give that road goal, and so I feel like there's a little bit of hesitation because it's the first match too. So Seattle can be a little bit more calculated when they press, and they have game changers in Raul Rui Diaz and as well as Jordan Moore. So not to mention Nico Ladero and Albert Rusnak now. But this is the club that I think has turned heads in Major League Soccer for a while now, and rightfully so.
Do you think Jordan Morris is back?
I don't.
He had a goal in this game.
Back yet.
A bombazo, let's call it. Christian Roldan cutting it back across the box, first time, right foot, boom. Had an assist in this one as well. Just a really nice, deft little layoff for Albert Rusnak. He's not back.
He's just back. He's on his way. He's well on his way. But it takes time.
What's missing?
What's missing? I'd say still we haven't seen that burst yet from him, that burst of pace. And just the confidence, being on the dribble and just running at guys, saying, you know what, I'll take you with speed for speed. In a foot race, I'll take anybody and push it by him and go. That's because that's when he's at his best, when he's just running at players and he's super confident. Not that he's not confident yet, but I think he's still getting there. And that just takes reps, repetition, until you know deep down inside you don't have to worry about anything, that you're back to normal and you can just focus on your playing and your recovery, and that's it. And I think that goal was huge for him because it was a well-taken goal. He smashed it. I loved everything about the finish. But I think when he's at his best, that's something that we'd see from him with consistency.
You like the haircut, Dave?
Not really.
Just asking you that because I knew you would give zero Fs.
No, I literally said it. I said, oh, really? You got a haircut since Saturday?
Yeah, it's a good haircut. It's a nice haircut. I like it. Pretty tight on the sides. Good fit.
I just like anytime him and Christian Roldan link up. They did it against Minnesota. It was actually it was an own goal in the end, but the buildup was really pretty. And what's fun about this Seattle team is all these dudes have freedom to just find the game. There's a moment where Rui Diaz gets played through down the left side and Jordan's the runner down the middle as the center forward. Ladero will float wide and Roldan will come in. Rusnak will push higher. Ladero will drop deeper. There's just so much movement across this team. But one thing you can guarantee is Roldan, Christian Roldan, starting to have to say that, knows exactly where Jordan Morris is going to be. He hits blind balls across the back line. He'll play an early cross in, whatever it is. It feels like the connection those two have is special. And when Jordan scores that goal, I think Christian Roldan's more excited than Jordan is about it and his celebration.
Yeah, he was absolutely on one.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool and pretty fun.
Roldan at wing is just, it's really fun to watch. I know there's a certain subset of like USMNT fans that'll groan about that, but if you actually watch him, and I'm guessing most of them don't, for the Sounders, the way he exploits and understands space, and the way his brother at right back understands how his space is going to open up depending on Christian's movement and decision making, is really, really impressive. And there are a couple times in this match, whether it be, you know, to drop, you know, Alex in, like, down the line, plays inside to Christian, who checked back but understands that the pass is coming. He plays him on the Rusnak goal. The ball is there to be played, and Christian sort of fakes it. Mm-hmm. And I think that unbalances NYCFC a little bit, because that's the expected ball. He turns, finds Jordan Morris, again, to your point, knows exactly where he is. And then on the Morris goal, like, you have to understand that Christian Roldan knows where that little space in that channel is to get him to the edge of the 18. Knows how to time the run, knows that his teammates are looking for him to try to exploit that space. That's where him checking back comes into play. He starts to check, he turns and spins, he's all by himself. Literal throw into his foot and ball across.
It's also a quick throw. No one else is paying attention, which is like, that's him in a nutshell. It's like he's on when everyone else is relaxed.
He sees that, he says, okay, that's my space. You know he wants to get there. You know on the cutback, he's precise. He understands where his runners are. It just works. And this is a Seattle Sounders team that now has 18 goals in 10 games, and they don't have any from Rui Diaz, Charlie.
Don't tell me you knew that Lodeiro could throw that far.
Yeah, I mean,
he did it in the first half, too, and it was like, oh, word, right. Okay, that's a part of Lodeiro's game.
Yeah, I think I was caught off guard because I thought, oh, man, he can actually chuck that thing. And Roldan runs onto it and plays that cutback ball for Morris to smash home. And I was thinking, oh, man, that's an added weapon that you
Yeah, you're not thinking about. All right, watch the long throw. Nico, watch the long throw.
Yeah.
What did you think of Rui Diaz? Because we sort of buried this lead, which is that Lodeiro and Rui Diaz started for the first time together. We saw Lodeiro start at the weekend and get, I think, 45 it was against Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And then Rui Diaz kind of flopped it and got 45 in the second half. They won in Minnesota. Now both start. And both played more than 70 minutes each?
I think Rui Diaz went like 80 plus.
Good shifts from them. And that's a good sign. Brian Schmetzer had said the governor is off. I don't know what his exact phrase was, but he basically said they're good to go. Our data people say they're good. You know, that's a normal saying,
right?
The
governor is off?
Yeah, like the governor, like in a car, you know, prevents you from, not that governor. Hi, gov. what'd you think of Rui Diaz in his first start? He didn't get a goal. Charlie?
It looked like he had been out for a while because it is, I think, as clinical as Rui Diaz is and efficient, you could still see his movement, but I think his timing was a little bit off. And you can look at the play where he tried to chip Sean Johnson from distance. The ideas are still there, the movement, but just the crisp finishing that we're accustomed to seeing from Rui Diaz wasn't there. And again, that's timing. It's a timing thing. I honestly think come summer, July, August, we're going to see the Sounders team flying. And Jordan Morris is going to be 100% fully fit and in form. I think Rui Diaz will be 100% fit and in form. And then you have Lodeiro, who people keep forgetting, as good as he is, he's still not anywhere near his peak, and he's still working his way back. This team is going to be really, really difficult to stop because Albert Rusnak is only going to get better because he's learning all the, I guess, the understanding of how this team works and the tendencies of Alex Roldan and Christian Roldan and Jordan Morris and Rui Diaz and Lodeiro. So it's only going to get better. I think Kellen Rowe, too, at left back was, you know. Oh,
cross it off on your bingo card, folks.
Yeah, like what?
Charlie got there.
he's still going.
No. He is, like, you couldn't invent a better squad player for the Seattle Sounders than Kellen Rowe. I have the skyline tattooed on the back of my tricep row. I can play however many positions you want me to play. He's turned into a guy, and he had that before, but oftentimes, I think early in his career, people looked at him as sort of like that, sort of like a little bit more of a luxury attacking player. But he's not. He's not like a nice guy on the field. He's a nice guy off the field, but he has a little bite to him too. Give me the Roosneck take on your part of the eight, Dave. We got all Doyle's thoughts last night on the live stream.
I'm sure it was.
What'd
fun.
You think of him at the eight? it was an absolute blast.
Armchair analyst.
Let me get my arm out. My armchair's out. I think since I've seen him there with Seattle, and it's not super surprising. It's a good position for him. Like, he is a high level technical player. He can take the ball under pressure. He can have, you know, defenders all around him, keep possession, and then play quality passes out of that. So his numbers will come down, but I actually think it may be the best role he could play for himself as well as for Seattle. And every time he's played it with Joao Paulo so far, they've played well. So I think it makes a ton of sense. I doubt there'll be a ton of games where all these guys are available, right? Especially with the injuries, you're going to be moving pieces in and out. And I think he's going to have to play up top, play as the 10, play wide. But every time I see him in this role, especially with like Jackson Reagan in the back, he's just another piece to help them build out of the back. And he's so clean and he's so good in possession. He's just a high level player. And it's one of those things when you watch this game, there's no weak pieces out there. And I think that midfield three of Roosnak, Joao Paulo, and Nico, I mean, they're all ballers. They can all play the final ball and all drop deep and start the attack.
The thing I think about with the Sounders right now, if you go through the starting lineup, and there was no Nuhu, and that's why Kellen Rowe is in. There's no Yaimar, that's why Jackson Reagan is in, who's turned into like...
best player.
I mean, he's like the literal definition of what you would hope to get out of the super draft, whether it be, hey, we have previous experience with him in our system, so we understand and know him. He'll be comfortable coming in. Just getting a player in the super draft these days, let alone at center back, they're like, cool, we're comfortable starting him on the best team in the league, arguably. What a draft pick that was for them. But like playing next to Joao Paulo, I think is sort of the, for all these players, is sort of the differentiator. Like, it settles everyone. And not only does it settle everyone, you have somebody who can kind of be the lead when it comes to having a little bit of confrontational nature to them, but with quality. Like, I love that he rolls around in the All Blacks. I love that he's not going to, you know, back down from anybody. It's what we saw in the first CCL game ever from him. And it's what makes me think this team has a chance to win it. It's not just him. He's sort of in prime. Jordan Morris coming back, but in prime. Christian Roldan in prime. You know, all around this team, you look at Alex Roldan in prime. Like,
Weeby's running a butcher shop all of a sudden. He's just selling steaks out there.
Yeah,
everything's prime grade.
I got a good list going. Get out of my way. I got a good list going right here. But what I'm saying is, like, this team is primed to, I think, perform at their very highest level. The only two guys that may not be in that quote-unquote prime zone, you might add Stefan Fry to that, are Ladero and Rui Diaz. So if Ladero and Rui Diaz truly are healthy, and are now in a position to get back into a rhythm and build game fitness and sharpness over the course of, you know, the next month or so, I'm fully on board the Charlie Davies train that this team, already pretty scary, are going to be just absolute terrors in a couple months. And look, that might coincide pretty well with the CCL final, which I believe is final week of April/first week of May.
Yeah.
So if you have about a month, and like, you got to get through NYCFC next Wednesday, like 2-0 win for NYCFC, and we'll talk about them in a second, would push them through. You got to get through, but if you're getting Yaimar back, if you're getting Rui Diaz and Ladero up to a new level, fitness and sharpness, and Morris too, like, this is just the beginning.
Let me just add in this before we get to NYCFC and talk about the second leg, because I don't think this is over at all. I don't think that this was a 5-0
maybe a little too congratulatory here.
I think so, but it was the quality of the soccer for both sides that I think kind of has us going there. Moving the game this weekend for both these teams in MLS, I think, gave us the game we had yesterday, that you could play these guys 75-80 minutes, focus on this game, focus on putting your energy to this competition. So I think that it was the right thing to do, and I think it definitely led to the quality of the performance that we saw for these two teams.
Yep. Get a little break here, and then we'll see him next week as well. Let's talk NYCFC. Maxi Morales out in this one. You know, reportedly a trunk injury.
Is that the side of the trunk.
Yeah, it sounds like it sounds like it's a rib thing. We had a lot of fun with it on the watch along last night. Just the idea of calling something a trunk injury is really funny to me. Yeah. But apparently, it's a rib issue for Maxi Morales. Dave, you were really complimentary of NYCFC. I thought they had their moments, but I didn't think that they were particularly sharp in the attacking third. I didn't think that they got Tyus Magno involved, really, in ways that we've seen him be involved, whether it be like out in the wing situations and maybe better for him sometimes when he comes inside and is able to drive a goal a little bit and play 1-2s off Tati. I thought Santi had some moments. Andrade had the goal, but was pretty quiet otherwise. I actually thought this was kind of muted from NYCFC. What did you see that maybe I did?
I thought that Magno had three or four half chances that should have been full chances that he should have scored. So it felt like the ball fell to them in the box a couple times where the shot's not as hard or as dangerous as it could have been. Stefan Fry had to push one or two away, that the rebound almost falls for NYCFC. So I thought they had their moments where they were pulling Seattle's back line around and getting dangerous balls into the box in those moments. I don't think they were dangerous when they had a ton of possession in the final third, when Seattle was able to recover. Most of their dangerous moments happen in transition, where normally they are more dangerous in possession and then when they lose it and counter press and whatnot. They weren't that yesterday. I think the loss of Maxi was a big part of that, but I did feel like they had their transition moments early and late on, where I thought that Magno was going to just beat that last person and finish or get a better shot off, and that they could have had two or three goals in the end from this one. And Amundsen was really good for them coming from that left wing back spot. They obviously didn't have either of the fullbacks against TFC this weekend, and you could just see the difference with Gray and Amundsen out there.
Roddy Dyla said that NYCFC, quote, controlled 80 or 90% of the game after this. I'm not sure I agree with that. Sounders win the XG battle. Sounders have the possession. I thought Sounders sort of dictated where the game was played and how. They were certainly the team that had a better idea of how to go about creating goal scoring opportunities and just putting their opponent under pressure. What would you do if you're Ronnie Dylan now at Rebel Arena, Charlie?
You're aggressive. You have to bring the lines higher up the field. You have to put more pressure on Seattle. I think the press has to be more aggressive. And then you got to play to Tati Castellanos in the final third. You have to play through him. It felt like Tati was checking back too often. And so when he checks in, you have no number nine. It's not like Eber is playing there too. So you have a dependable number nine there. So he has to be your point. He always has to be the highest player up the pitch. Unless you're in the final third, then he can pull out and he makes good runs and he gets defenders to come out of position, creates little holes for Santi Rodriguez, who I think was trying to find himself as a 10. It wasn't that he had a poor performance, but he's used to getting in the ball on the wing and coming inside and being on the dribble and playing, you know, quick combination plays or taking players on. So they have a lot of weapons. You can't count them out. That's for sure. They're a very talented team, and I think it was a reserved kind of performance from them. I expect them to go all guns forward for the home match. And I also will add that the right back, Tavon Gray, is very good defensively. But when it comes to the attacking phase of the game, especially when the field's big, like it was in Seattle, he tends to shy away. And he I don't think he trusts his delivery. Because there was a time where there was a free kick and he was like, I don't want to take it. And it was halftime and they blew the whistle. Because he didn't believe that he could play in that ball that needed to give your team a chance. So I think when Anton Tederholm eventually gets back, that's going to be a welcomed option for New York City FC, because they've been missing that attacking right back. Even though Tavon Gray has done well since he's been in, he just doesn't have the same quality in the attacking third.
It's a good reminder for folks when they watch this game and think, oh my God, the Sounders, look at them. But like, okay, Anton Tederholm been out long term. But more specifically for me in this game, first, it's Maxi. We talked about the spine the NYCFC has built. That's the spine that's gotten them the most points in MLS over the last, I don't even remember at this point. We've repeated it so many times, like 5 or 6 years. Whatever it is, you understand the concept. But then you look at center back, Dave. Thiago Martins has not exactly, like we were joking about the David Goss theorem with him last night. It's not like he's coming for Maxime Cheneau next
to. I didn't watch the show last night, but you said that, and Charlie took a big sip, and it feels like I got thrown under a bus by
no,
Charlie.
No, you didn't.
Davies.
You didn't. We were just trying to figure out how the David Goss theorem might apply. Like, if Thiago Martins plays better, let's say he has not played particularly well so far for NYCFC. If he starts to play better, like, when can the David Goss theorem be in effect? If it's in like 6 months, is that the David Goss theorem, or do we have to wait till next year? Are we going?
You'd probably wait till next season. With him, we had Roberto Abramovitz on MLS Today yesterday. Plug, if you want to listen to it. Good MLS plug. Today podcast, Spotify, live every day, 11 a.m. Eastern time.
Get
on
it.
Twitter Spaces. We had him on yesterday. He calls the games on the radio in Spanish for NYCFC. And he said he talked to Thiago Martins, and Martins said it's faster, stronger, and more technical here than it was in Japan. Like, he's trying to get up to speed on every level. It felt like the right setting to bring him into, because you do have a team that has a ton of pieces that are established, except Tavon Gray's been hurt all year. Anton Tinnerholm's not there. James Sands has now left. Keaton Parks, while back in this game, has not been 90 minutes fit. So
here's the number. Let me just give it to you. NYCFC played 10 matches so far, 8 different backline defensive midfielder combinations. And as everyone knows, they've been literally around seemingly the hemisphere.
So it's been tough for him, and I think you're seeing it in every phase. I think in possession, he looks harried. It's quicker than he expects it to be. And then out of those moments, he seems to sort of be recovering. And constantly, one of the goals they gave up against TFC, he sort of turns and looks at Acevedo, who's playing right back, who's never played that position before, about marking. It's like, no, dude, that was your man. You just don't know what's on your back shoulder, and you don't have communication right now with your teammates. And so I think it's been a struggle for him. And I think that was the expectation, was like, Cheneau is not done, right? They brought him in now to be ready to be that replacement, but not to do it today. And while he is a DP and he should be able to step in, and Jackson Reagan on the flip side, right? Yaimar was my defensive player of the year last year. He's missing. Reagan steps in and is able to carry a high level, but Reagan's coming into a more stable situation than what NYCFC has been able to put together for Martins, and so he's struggling. At the same time, and Charlie said, Jordan, maybe you don't see the full burst. He was 1v1 with Jordan Morris down the left side, and he shouldered Morris off and had that ball run out, and I thought he was going to get toasted in that play. That was 60 minutes in, right? So I think you see him figuring it out as games go along, figuring out opponents as games go along, and now he gets to face the same team twice in a week, which maybe makes things a little easier for him.
Wednesday, Red Bull Arena, 3-1 advantage right now for the Seattle Sounders, but that one away goal for NYCFC. Ronnie Dyla said it. We all know it. You just got to look at the chart here. 2-0 win would send NYCFC through.
And one, love your breakdown, Goss. Well done. That was nice. I got a question for both of you. If you had the choice, which team would you rather face, Cruz Azul or Pumas?
I think
Or does it depend on the club?
It depends a little on the club, but either way, I would say Pumas. Cruz Azul are a deeper team. I think they have a more experienced back line and then good young pieces in the attack and a little bit more of a pedigree at this level. Like, they've won a championship more recently with this coach and these guys on this team, where Pumas is sort of like a, we don't know any better, we'll throw everything out there team, which probably fits NYC better than Seattle. But I think for both teams, you'd rather play Pumas.
I just wish that Estadio Azul was still rocking and rolling, so that if we do in fact find a way to get to, whether it be Mexico or Seattle or New York City, for the second leg of the final, we get to experience that. That's a plan right now. We're going to try to be at the final. We'll see what happens on that front. Hopefully the second leg, hopefully for a possible chance at history for an MLS team. We'll depend on the next game to see who's there, and then leg one, wherever it is, to see what happens in the final. But the quest continues. Guard yourself. Gird thy loins. It's CCL. Things happen. Painful things. Hopefully this year won't be one of those years. All right, let's talk U.S. Open before we get moving here. Another wonderful tournament that is back finally in full force. So we're in the middle of round two right now. Round three is when MLS teams will enter, as I said, or in the intro there. Friday is when the draw for that will be. You'll have 17 MLS teams come in at that point, and they will have to face a lower division club. So you will not see them matched up against other MLS teams, which is the way this tournament should be. Some big results to note this week so far. We do have some games tonight as well that I haven't talked through. But the only MLS Next Pro team in the competition, I believe, is St. Louis City SC 2. They won 2-0, knocked off USL Championship side Indy 11 at Ooey Pooey in Indianapolis. Ezra Armstrong, you'll recognize that last name.
Is that
name.
How you pronounce that? Of, I thought it was I-U-P-U-I.
Yeah, but you say Ooey Pooey.
Okay, I didn't. Right? I think I've never heard that before. I'm not a big Indiana guy.
Charlie Fiction, if you're listening, get at us here. Let us know if we're hitting the Ooey Pooey ride. That sounds better, I got to say. But Ezra Armstrong, son of U.S. Soccer Hall of Famer Desmond Armstrong, scored the first goal defender for St. Louis City SC2. And then Juan Cousin got the second, so big win for them. They move on. FC Tucson with an upset, 3-2 over Las Vegas Lights FC, USL Championship. Central Valley Fuego FC, USL 1, knocked off El Paso Locomotive 4-1. Villan Bijev with 2 goals. You know him from Sacramento and Oklahoma
You'll
City
never
in the past.
Never walk alone. Liverpool guy.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
for you, Charlie. Yeah. I did that
early
for
days,
you.
Liverpool. Oh, yeah, for sure. And then the two biggest results, I think. One, we had a Monterey Bay FC upset by Bay Cities FC, NISA team. It was a stoppage time overhead kick to win that one. But Northern Colorado Hailstorm FC
baby.
Out of USL 1. Their first competitive match, first yep. ever, like in their history. This is their first competitive match, the first time they've done it. They beat Colorado Springs Switchbacks, who are top the USL Championship right now. Beat them 1-0. Played down 90 minutes. They won in extra time. They played down a man 90 minutes. I think there's.
I think
red
Switchbacks
card
got a red card.
But either way, for
so
an
they
hour,
came, they came.
Yeah, I think for an
them.
Hour down a yeah. man. In their first competitive game, pulled the upset. So that's
wow.
pretty sweet. This
Hailstorm team has some legends in it, by the way. So just throwing that out there.
Give me a name.
Breck Evans, FC Dallas Academy legend. Danny Robles, Seattle Sounders Ooh. Academy legend. Irving Parra, who got the red card. Las Vegas Lights legend. Boom. That's all you needed.
Okay. You know, there you go. You got the legends listed off. But yeah, MLS teams will all be in by the round of 32, and 17 will enter after the second round is over. You can watch all the games on ESPN Plus. Let's talk Brenner real quick. Brenner, according to Laura Pfeiffer of Queen City Press, wants a move. Said he wanted to move. Internacional was in, made an offer, but since he wanted to hold on to him. What do you make of this, Charlie? We're a year into the Brenner experience, $13 million. FC Cincinnati, I think like he might be the third most expensive player all time in MLS history. 8 goals in his first season. It's a new Cincinnati. They've turned a new leaf here,
yeah,
but
without
that
so
turn, Brenner.
So new. So
yeah,
new.
Yeah, just the newest. Brenner has not been in the lineup, really. He's been off the bench when you had Brandon Vasquez, who's the Golden Boot leader, as yeah. well as Dom Baggi. Up top in the two-man striker group. So I understand why Brenner would say he wants a move. He wants playing time. I understand why he would say he want to go home. We've talked repeatedly about, you know, how difficult things have been in Cincinnati with the turnover and the results and everything under the sun.
Yeah.
What do you make of this this little news nugget?
It makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, you're
from whose
about,
perspective? From Brenner's perspective.
From Brenner's perspective, you are kind of sold on a project and a dream. And for Brenner, it was, I have to take a move to Major League Soccer to make my dream move to go over and play in Europe. And so I will continue to develop here at Cincinnati with a brand new stadium and this amazing project. And it's been everything but that. It's been a disaster. So for any foreigner to come into a new team,
has it been a complete disaster?
Yeah. You gonna tell me it hasn't been?
Nah, I don't. I'm just like trying to figure out on the scale of disaster. I don't know if this is like a
Cincinnati is a disaster.
Okay, Cincinnati that undoubtedly they have been a disaster. It feels like. You know, it feels like they're recovering from the earthquake,
no.
but you know, there's some aftershocks coming through as well.
Still, yeah, there's no recovery yet. I mean, they've made some hires to address how the club has gone, but we still haven't seen any type of change yet. Like they're
playing better. They're a better attacking team this year, Charlie.
Great. But still, nothing's changed. So, I mean, if you're talking about a perspective from a player, I'm still excited to play. If I'm a striker, I'm still excited to play Cincinnati. If I'm a team, I'm thinking that's a 3-point game for us. that should be a 3-point game for us.
And meanwhile, Brent is looking at this from the bench, is what you're saying.
Exactly. And if you're a striker who has been brought in, and I'm sure he was not promised, but basically told, these are how things are going to play out. You're going to be playing, and we're going to get you to, you know, fulfill your potential. And all of a sudden, you're on the bench for you know, players who have done pretty well in Major League Soccer, but. You know, Dom Baggi, how long has he been in?
No, but he's on the bench because he was hurt in the offseason, mm-hmm. and he's working his way back. And I think what you saw in the subs at Montreal is like the intention is him and Brandon Vasquez start up top, right? The intention is for him to be a starter, whether they're going to be good or not, and whether it's the platform for him to get to where he wants to, Charlie. You're right. And I think it's fair for him to question that. But I don't think mm-hmm. the playing time should be an issue because, one, you should earn it, and two, I think they're going to give him the opportunity to take it if he's ready to. I don't know that he'll be that guy, though. Like, you can't guarantee that.
I would say yes, playing time should always be earned. But you know, as well as I do, that's not how it works in MLS most of the time.
Well, and not just MLS, Charlie, a lot of leagues. Sometimes when you pay $13 million, you get pressure from above that says, hey, we ought to try to get the most out of this mm-hmm. particular asset. I get why on the other side, Cincinnati would say, nah, we're not about this. I'm guessing, this is just me guessing, Internacional sees a potential bargain. They see a loan. They see a low fee. They see a way to go get a guy that was worth XYZ X number of months ago for less. And so, yeah, I get it from Cincinnati's perspective. They still see the potential. They spent this money. They've got to make this investment come good. It could still come good. He's only 22 years old. He had 8 goals last year.
The flip side to that is Chris Albright comes in and he's like, oh, we spent this much money on this player. I don't rate him.
Yeah,
and that's fair. From the Cincinnati's perspective, they could say there might be all this hype around Brenner, but we don't see it, and we didn't spend that money to bring him here, so we're not responsible. I get you made this investment, but if you want to win and if you trust in me to guide this team to where they want to be, then I'm not playing him because he doesn't deserve
the question. The question with that, and I agree with you, Charlie, is what is the number that Internacional is offering them? And then what can they do with that? Because if you can't do much with it, or, you know, you're not going to be allowed to use the money again because DPs don't need to have them. They're not guaranteed.
Also, remember, you have to recoup acquisition costs.
Then they may might be better off with him on the roster. The one thing I'll say, just from an MLS point of view, and I think it's something that we should be talking about because I think teams should be pressured on a little bit, is there are value now that you're in the market where you're buying young players that other people care about. There's value to these players if they play well for you or not. And so teams should be careful with the way they spend that money, and everything should be, you know, you want to dot all the I's and cross all the T's. But then if it doesn't work, like Barco or Pochettino or potentially what Brenner is, other people in the world will buy these players at a high number for a high value because it's not indicative completely of their careers. And I think it should be something where MLS teams, you want to be careful, but also you got to make moves. And if it doesn't always work out, there is now lateral movement that you can make to get off those contracts and bring other players in that I don't think existed when MLS was spending money on, for example, a Torsten Frings and a Danny Kuvermans. I don't know why I went straight TFC.
Yeah, you're right about that.
But no one else was going to buy them. They had value to an MLS team that they didn't have to other teams.
So basically you're saying PT Martinez, basically, right?
Cutting they losses, made money off PT.
You made money.
It was ridiculous, but that's what happens when you buy a South American player of the year.
I would also just like to add that just from a, hey, what would I like to see in these situations? And maybe that's why I'm sitting here saying, hey, let's give Brenner the opportunity. He has the talent. What could he do next to Vasquez? They're going to improve. They're going to get better. Pat Noonan will drive them forward. And they only had one way to go, is that there are a lot of young foreign players brought into the league that there are some that thrive. And this is any league, obviously, but there are some that thrive, but we still have a large number, whether it be, I don't know, the environment they're in, the scouting, whatever it is, that don't reach the potential that the price tag indicated. Mm-hmm. And that's something for MLS teams to look in the mirror and say, okay, we're the ones that made this decision. It might not have been Noonan and whatever, and they changed their soccer structure in Cincinnati, so they obviously understand that they did some things wrong. What can we do better to integrate young players quickly and effectively and not just be like, well, they're going to hold value because other people care about them. We need our teams to figure out how to grow that value, how to grow the demand, how to get first team impact from those players. We have shown it on the homegrown side, and maybe that has something to do with the, you know, the David Goss theorem of like it takes time for players outside the league, outside the culture to come in and settle.
Well, it depends.
MLS teams got to figure out how to make that process go faster and how to make better decisions in signing players. That's $13 million. Like, if Brenner's not that guy, you got to go back in your process and be like,
but Weeby, what did we
do wrong so that next Weeby, time
they fired all the people who made that signing?
I guess that's true.
That was them reassessing it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, they did that's everything.
Wrong. I'm saying universally to the whole league.
The only because thing
there's a Rodney Redis in Austin. There's a, you know, like fill in the blank. You can go find.
It is also part of signing unproven players, right? You're not signing on track record. Yeah, you're signing on potential. It's not always going to hit. But I do agree with you that enough is not being done to make sure that these players come into a proper environment and can be effective. At the same time, Facundo Torres looks good. Diego Rossi hit immediately. Yeah, Patrick Klamala has been the highest XG, whatever. Tati, like, there are also examples on the other side of all of this.
That's fair. I just want even 10% better would make the league better.
Well, what ends up happening is scouts go down, they see an attractive player, they're like, oh, this player can do X, Y, Z. We got to get him, and everyone wants him, so we gotta win this bid, and they sign them, but they don't fit how the head coach is playing. They don't fit the system. And so, therefore, you're trying to force a player into the system that doesn't fit. How do you expect them to take off?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if you're looking back at the situation for Cincy, I know they want to be ambitious. I applaud their ambition. It is awesome to see that ownership group go build a new stadium, go build a new facility for training, go spend this amount of money on players, etc. But then that comes back to decision-making on your front office. Like, you know, you gave the foxes the keys of the kitchen, the chicken coop. You know what I mean? And like, then you had to fire the dudes. Like, I don't know. Hopefully more get right. Hopefully Brenner gets right. I want to see him succeed in this league. Let's go to the weekend, Saturday. Not the first national TV game, but you're gonna groan as you hear me say this. The biggest, El Tráfico, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Galaxy hosting LAFC. Fox Deportes. We're going to get Chicharito and Vela this time around, but Chicharito, look, Javier Hernandez is saying, quote, it's not Chicharito versus Carlos Vela. It's LA Galaxy versus LAFC. He's a top player. I'm a top player, but we have to be respectful of all these other scrubs. I added all these other scrubs. I'm just kidding. But it is a big deal that these two are finally coming together. Carlos Vela has been an absolute menace against the Galaxy. He has 10 goals all time. I think that's in like 8 games, so decent record. And Chicharito, we know, when he's on the field for the Galaxy, he changes things. What are the vibes going into this El Tráfico? Dave, what do you read? What do you feel? How much does this particular game matter? There was certainly a time, particularly when Zlatan was around and Vela was full strength, where this was the game. Is it still the game?
Yeah, I actually think it's in a different way on a higher level. And I know they played in the playoffs, and obviously Zlatan had his debut game. But to me, this is the first time both teams have been convincingly good at the same time facing off against each other. And you're looking at the first and third place teams in the Western Conference. You're looking at two teams from a top down that now have, I think, a distinct style, organization to the way they play, the way they, as Charlie talked about, recruit players to their system that fit in under these coaches, all those things. And so I think this is a huge moment because with two new managers, and we don't know what Vela's future will be, I think this is setting the tone for the next stage of the rivalry, right? You had Bob and that time for LAFC and Zlatan and then Jonah Dos Santos and all that for the Galaxy. And now this is the Steve Cherundolo, Greg Vanney. This is Cabral and Brian Rodriguez and whatever those pieces are. This is the next stage, I think, of the rivalry. So I think this is a huge moment to sort of establish yourself. If I'm a Galaxy fan, even though you had that little something where they just couldn't beat you.
Yeah, you had the mental edge.
You've never been this confident going into one of those games that you can play your soccer and win. Marky Delgado is a huge loss and an unfortunate moment for them.
Mark.
Sorry. My apologies. Of course. Mark Delgado.
Break your...
But I think this is This is the El Tráfico that I'm most excited for, because I think you're looking at two teams that know who they are and are ready to sort of fight for the heart of LA.
What do you think about this Carlos Vela contract stuff, Charlie? He still has not agreed to a new contract. We know it expires June 30th. He has 12 more games before June 30th, including this El Tráfico.
Yeah, it's strange. I can't ever remember a situation like this in Major League Soccer where your best player can literally walk away midseason. That never happens. And so Carlos Vela, he's also an enigma. People don't know where he lies. What, you know, he's never expressed, hey, I want to be here for the rest of my life. I love LA. This is my club. I want to be here for the rest of my career. So you don't know if that's even a possibility. If he said, hey, Coach Cherundolo came in here. He's changed the game. He's changed the environment. He's kind of given me that feeling of enjoying the game again. I could see myself playing my rest of my career under Cherundolo here, and I'm ready to do that. And I feel healthy. I feel good again. I've never heard anything like that. He's never given anything away. He has all the leverage in the world from that sense, because he can say, you have a chance at a championship with me here. If I leave midseason and they don't have two players per se to come in the summer, DPs already lined up, that LAFC are going to be in some trouble, because it goes from competing for a top spot seed in playoffs to actually being a contender when you have Carlos Vela on the team. So I think from LAFC's perspective and Steve Cherundolo's perspective, it's, we just have to play our absolute best for these next 12 games. And hopefully that's enough. That's enough to convince him that I want him to be a part of this project. He's massive. I see him being a key piece for this club, and that we're going to respect him and his family and treat them well. That's what you can hope for.
Is there the way you're laying that out is that LAFC are on a side where they just got to get Carlos back?
I don't think I agree.
But at what number, and as I was going to say, and how many years, Doyle had it in his mailbag. He said he doesn't think, for the best of LAFC in the future, he doesn't think that that's a move they should make.
I mean, I think if you want to win a championship, you keep him. And I'm not saying you give him a 5-year deal. I've seen a number of contracts where it's 2 years, maybe it's one plus, you know, it's whatever it is. I think you have to see what he can do for the rest of this year. Maybe it's just an extension to the end of the year, and then you make that final decision. But I just feel like it would be just such an awkward ending.
It would be. Yeah.
Carlos Vela's time.
It would be. It also, I think it would fall on LAFC. I think it would fall on Vela as well, that he said he wants to win things and then would leave in June when they're in first place. And I understand he's got to look out for his career and his life and his family, and this will probably be his last contract. So do you really want to sign an extension with no guarantee after that? What if he gets hurt? Okay, but you said you wanted to win things. The team's in first place. They're doing well. Is that really the moment you're going to leave? I think for LAFC, the key is you can't mortgage your future on Vela just because of his availability over the last few years. It feels like they will have an open DP spot because Rossi is probably headed to Europe full-time and not coming back. And so if you can make it a 1.5-year deal, right, get him to the end of this year and then have him again for next year with that guarantee, which would take him to 34, I think, or 35 years old.
That sounds like,
I think that's fair. Yeah, because you can then get out of it if something happens. LAFC doesn't give their entire future to a guy who's in his mid-30s. They also can make another big-time signing with that DP spot. Robert Lewandowski, free agent, anyone? Did Charlie just say that? I just heard that in my ear.
I don't know. It sounded like you just whispering in the microphone.
But yeah, so that would be an ideal setting for LAFC, but I don't think... I guess Charlie's point, which is right, is if they're in first place in this summer, they have a shot to win MLS Cup this year, and their best shot of doing it is with Carlos Vela on the field. And I'm sure Masai Ujiri and the Toronto Raptors would say you do everything to win a championship and you figure out the rest later. I don't know if LAFC will operate that way. But we've never really seen this in MLS before because it's such an odd contract situation.
What if I'm thinking in terms of like what you see in other sports where it's like superstars like, hey, I'll stay, but this is what I need out of your roster. You need to do this. You need to surround me with X to get to what you're talking about, which is that championship.
Haven't they?
You know, if you're thinking about that DP spot in the summer, where would you, you know, if you're Carlos Vela and you're talking to Thorington or whoever it might be, and you're saying, hey, we could really use this. If you get this, I will commit a year and a half at this number. And it'll be a, you know, it's not a number that's going to make you scream. Doyle wrote TAM, you know, could they get him on a TAM contract in his column? That's out of the question. Like, it's not even, like, literally, if I was Carlos Vela, I would laugh at you. I would be like, what are we even doing here if that's what you're offering me? Is a high volume striker the difference? Like, if they said, hey, we're going to get Robert Lewandowski in the summer, that would make a difference, right? If you're Carlos,
well, obviously,
Vela? Yeah. Actually, you don't know. I think it comes down to family. He's a family guy.
Yeah.
So if his wife loves LA and she could see herself being there, and the kids, then yes. But if she wants to go back to Spain, that's something entirely different.
Yeah, you just might not have a starting point.
No matter what, you might not have a shot.
Yeah, we'll see what happens here. Galaxy have an opportunity to knock off the top team in the West, as we said, to get a little bit of just one over on their rivals and try to reestablish themselves early on in this Greg Vanney era, at least the year plus in. Who outside the obvious candidates do you think has a chance to be an unsung hero, an unlikely hero for El Tráfico? Because we've seen Zlatan in the past, we've seen Carlos Vela, but we've seen some other guys do some special things.
I want to go first. I know Goss is probably going to take my guy.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
Galaxy. First,
I know who it is.
Okay, Galaxy.
I thought you were going to say Julian.
Okay. I thought he was going to go Raheem.
Nice.
Okay. I'm going Efrén Álvarez.
But now we've thrown out a ton. This is a classic unsung hero draft. First pick goes to Charlie. He takes Efra. What is about Efra that you are feeling he'll chuck?
I think he's working his way back to full fitness, because I think he's always been a player talking to a number of his former teammates that has struggled to have, you know, prime time match fitness. And so that will be his either his downfall or something that he overcomes, and then he's able to kind of fulfill the potential that Zlatan Ibrahimovic said he had. He's a gifted player, no doubt. Everyone knows that. But can he stay fit? Can he stay locked in? Can he play 90 minutes without any problems? Because he is such a young kid. And I remember when you're that age, you feel like you can play two matches. Around the 70, 75th, 80th minute, he starts to get, you can see like heavy legs. So for me, if he can build off this match on the road against Portland, which is never easy, he still always looks so comfortable in possession. And his delivery, the weight of his passes, you know, he can bend balls in, he can scoop balls in, just he's very clever. I think he, this year, he could take it to that next level. And so
got to be the final product though, right?
There you go.
That's what you're relying on him for. All right, first pick off the board, Efra.
I'm going.
You're up, Dave. I'll take the third.
Can pick. I say, multi- can pick. I do a list?
Unsung hero draft. No, we'll do okay. two rounds.
I'll do a list. Charlie.
No, Charlie. List.
Yeah.
One, yeah.
Anders, no here list. You go. It is all four fullbacks. I think it's going to be Ryan Hollingshead for LAFC.
Well, this is. This
I think
is
it's going to be Raheem Edwards and Julian Araujo for the LA Galaxy.
He's taking matchups.
It's
guys.
Unacceptable.
No one said anything about matchups.
I think they're both teams that use their fullbacks in interesting ways, and I think you're looking at three to four guys who are all willing to come in field and be chance creators. And what Raheem Edwards is doing, the only person we've seen play similar to this over the last few years was Ryan Hollingshead in Dallas, coming in field, being a chance creator. Hollingshead's now shown he can play right and left back for this team. So I think those are unsung guys where when their teams are up, it's because those players are in the attacking third, are giving them extra numbers, are creating overloads, are putting the pressure on the opponent. And I do think this will be a back and forth game. It won't be 90 minutes of one team controlling it, but that's going to be sort of your sign that team's on the front foot.
So disrespectful. Go ahead. We take all four.
This is a miscarriage. It's a miscarriage of justice. It's actually a crime against unsung hero drafts. I'm going to go Ryan Revelison. We don't have Mark Delgado in this game. I'm still trying to figure out how they're going to set up in the midfield next to Relison. I mean, that partnership has been so good and so fundamental to what they've done this year, both in protecting the back line, but also putting, whether it be Grand Sire Cabral or Douglas Costa or whoever, in positions to provide service to Chicharito. They've been absolutely crucial, and so you lose Mark Delgado at absolutely the worst time to that double yellow card, red card, in their last match against Portland. Who comes in? Like, you don't have a like for like, really, and Greg Vanney has said this week, you know, if we're really in trouble in central midfield, that's where we need to build out some more depth. So is it Sasha that comes in? He's more been a bench impact player recently. Is it Daniel Aguirre? Is it Perez? Like, there's...
I think it's Sasha, question, just because he's... You know what you're going to get from him consistently. Well,
there's an unsung hero. If I was Dave, I'd take two right there.
Well,
I mean... How about on the LAFC side? We took Hollingshead. I think actually Hollingshead is probably the rightful number one overall pick in this draft.
Mama do fall, baby.
Yeah. Is he even unsung at this point? I don't even know if he's unsung. I think...
Yeah. I mean, you could do Brian Rodriguez, right? So, like...
That's an
unsung hero on that squad.
I'm going to throw out Opoku. I think Opoku as like a late game sort of, hey, try to match my intensity, try to match my directness for Steve Cherundolo. He's been really effective so far, both starting and off the bench. But I would throw out Opoku. I think he has a good chance to make an impact in this one. There's a lot of players. I mean, you go through. I mean, Tajiri Shradi is a guy we haven't talked about a ton, had an impact in this last game. You know, Ilya scores a banger. This should be a good one. Really fun. Fox, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, Saturday. El Trafico, the first of the season. The first with both Carlos Vela as well as Chicharito. Go check out the call-up. They talked to Chicharito, so tune into that one. Let's keep it rolling here on Saturday. Orlando, Chicago, Univision Tudien, Twitter in English. Chicago, statistically the best defense in the league. Say it out loud. Say it proud. Hasn't been that way in a long time. They even did it without Shihu's last game, which is rather incredible. Any big notes? Anything you're watching from this game other than the lineups to see if Shaqiri's in because he had to leave early? I believe the 19th minute last weekend.
Yeah, I would say whether Shaqiri is back or not with Shihu's, then it's a question mark of where Pineda plays. And I think I've been interested how well he's played in center mid, and that Ezra Hendrickson was very specific about that, but then immediately got slid back to center back when they needed it and played well there as well. And I talked about it with Doyle on the Power Ranking show, but to me, he's entering like a Christian Roldan phase of, I can't tell you what position he'll play, but he'll be on the field every game for Chicago that he's healthy, and he's a part of them winning. And I think that's pretty exciting that for a club that's had great talent and hasn't used their homegrowns, they're finally starting to get the best out of it.
Big question mark, though, for Chicago. I mean, look, we've talked about the defense. We can praise them for that. They have not yet figured out how to consistently create scoring.
And I don't think they will until Torres gets there. So I'm kind of like...
Yeah, without Shaqiri in, it's like, who's going to be the guy? Like, if you want to win, you got to score goals. Flip side is you are going against an Orlando team that's now missing Antonio Carlos and are pretty thin in the back. So it's going to be, you assume, Janssen and Schlegel. But anytime you get a chance to watch Facundo Torres, I've liked Rick Encara so far. I think he's looked good, maybe not as goal dangerous as you want him to be, but in terms of like setting up the players around him and understanding how to like use his body for drop offs, for, you know, to hold the ball up and flip it in behind on the wings, he's been really good. So 1 p.m. Eastern time, Orlando, Chicago. How about Miami, New England? Here's a question for you, Charlie, and then we'll get to the Matt Turner replacement signed by the Revs. From Andy from Revs Nation. I can't tell. It looks like he's wearing a Minuteman outfit in his photo. Maybe not. How do the Revs turn things around? Four losses in a row, own goals, late collapses, red cards. With all the injuries, the key players, are the past 3 weeks a blip, or is there something different this season that just is not working? Give me your Revs takes.
A massive difference is you have no Matt Turner in goal. Matt Turner is the sole reason why they were able to put up a lot of points last year, because he's a difference maker. I mean, not only turning draws into wins, but wins from losses, because he comes up with these massive game-changing saves and allows the back line to play with a certain freedom. You throw in injuries to Henry Kessler, you throw in injuries to Andrew Farrell as well. So there's the continuity is not the same for the Revs in the back. Then you lose Tejan Buchanan, And I can't stress enough what a difference maker he is as a player, because he changes the way opponents play you and press you because of his pace and his tenacity and his willingness to run at you 1v1 and pulling players out of position, which then frees up space, a little more space for Carlos Hill, because he doesn't get much space as it stands. But with a Tajon Buchan, he has a little bit more. And so I think when you bring in Sebastian Legette and he plays much more narrow than a Tajon, and you throw in Tommy McNamara, your midfield gets very narrow. And so your outside backs are forced to be a little bit more high than they normally are. And that's where you get your width. That leaves a lot of space for your two center backs to cover and Matt Polster. So it's almost like a triangle. And over the course of time, when you don't have a Matt Turner in goal, you're going to get exposed and you're going to get punished. And that's what we've seen. And then you throw in Josie Altidore and Gustavo Bo being hurt, and Josie just isn't fit yet. And Adam Buxa also hasn't been at his sharpest. So you throw in a number of those reasons for the Revs not being at their best. And the best part about it is it's early on the season. So you can go through all these bumps and bruises and pains and knowing that, hey, we just got to figure some things out, make some adjustments, and then we can get back on our ways.
Generally, at least for now, going to Miami is a good way.
Here's
best.
Your quote. I think Franco Panizo tweeted it out that the goalkeeper, Nick's Marksman's quote about the team was, quote, "It is a S word feeling at the moment." So that's the internal temperature.
From the outside looking in, it definitely looks S word feeling right now for them. Speaking of Matt Turner, though, let's talk about the replacement. 22-year-old Serbian, Georgi Petrovic, comes in from FC Kukarki.
Oh, come on, baby. You weren't ready for this.
FC Kukarki. 86 appearances, 33 clean sheets, goals against average of 0.99 in three seasons. Young guy has one cap for Serbia against the Dominican Republic. Well, that's an interesting international game. Serbia DR in 2021.
Right? Where was that game played?
Inside, I don't know. That's an incredible... I don't know. The one he will remember forever, I hope for his sake, in the DR. Charlie, any scouting reports on Georgi, the second big-time Georgi we have in this league? Seems like an interesting profile.
Interesting. I have not seen him play. I just know the profile looks good.
He's 6'4".
He's a keeper, 6'4". You just have to be hopeful that he comes in and he's the real deal, because he was brought in to replace Matt Turner. So you can't bring in a keeper who is not going to come in and kind of stand on his head right off the bat and kind of be impressive. So there's always going to be that, you know, first month or so of getting used to the league and the team and the players. But ultimately, I think he's got to be a big-time shot stopper.
I feel like there's another MLSer that came from this club. Who would it be? I feel like he plays for Chicago Fire. You can correct me, somebody on Twitter. Maybe.
Nope. I know who it is.
No, you don't, Charlie.
Sekulic.
He was an attacking player.
Stojanovic. Yes. Told you. I knew it was on the Fire. I got a little help there from Charlie. Appreciate that, Chuck. Yeah, look, with Inter Miami, Gonzalo Higuain, his dad apparently said he was going to retire after
the game. Come on, Weeby, move it along. We got good games to talk about.
I got nothing on them. Sunday, Charlotte, Atlanta, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, ABC. I repeat, ABC. Pick it up with Antenna. Available to all. Charlotte, Atlanta. Charlotte looking, you know. They weren't screwed, which is nice to see. I wonder if Karol Sudarsky is going to be ready for this one. I know he's had some injury issues. I hope he will be. Got some question marks on the other side. If you want to watch Ben Bender, you have good instincts because he looks really good so far. We have in the rundown rivalry, ? Yeah, not going to give that in the air. Let's see it on the field. I will give some air, though, to Ozzie. One, bad news on his ACL. He's out. And then Joseph, knee evaluation, quote-unquote. This is not good news, Dave. This is not what Atlanta wants to hear. It's just sort of it's a downer, man.
Only thing I would say is he's clearly not himself. So you'd rather them figure it out and get over it and try and get him back than to just keep pretending that he is who he is and letting him be out there and struggle and lose confidence and sort of affect the shape of the team even at times. And I don't know that there's a backup on this team. You have Dom Dwyer. You have Cisneros, who they brought over from Chivas. They have Jackson Conway as well. It's obviously not ideal for Atlanta, but you still have match winners on this team, right? And you still have quality across this group. I mean, your back five is one of the strongest, I think, in MLS, which you couldn't have said over the last few years. So there's still a platform for Atlanta to play off of, but Ozzie's a huge loss. And I think Ozzie was supposed to be the like calm in the storm while Almada figures it out and Araujo settles in and Joseph comes back. It was like, here's a known quantity that Gonzalo Pineda can rely on, and you've now lost that. And on top of that, you don't know who Joseph is for your team. So yeah, it's a pretty worrying moment, I think, for Atlanta and for Charlotte. Since Adam Armour scored against Atlanta, it's gotten better and better for them. So can you show in a month or less, whatever it's been, how far you've come and maybe get one over on a rival that's in a down moment? And is that, on ABC, on Sunday afternoon, at a home stadium, is that a way to sort of reignite yourself in your market and say, yeah, this is a team that's not only entertaining, this is a moment that's not only fun, it's not just a new team, we're also competitive and a shot across the bow of really the big dog in our region?
Have you ever had you've had a long injury history, Charlie, a variety of things. Have you ever had a situation where you had to go in for an evaluation like this, where you were training, you're playing, and you're like, oh man, this ain't right?
Yeah. I felt like that the first 16 months after my injury in the car accident. So it felt like, it was my elbow, then it was my concussion that I had from the brain bleed that I suffered, my right femur, the leg strength in my right leg. And I had the inch and a half leg difference because of the femur break. So my body's just wasn't aligned at all. And so there was a lot of compensation, and that's what ultimately led to me having to deal with so many muscular injuries in the very beginning, a lot of hamstrings and calves. So, and groins. It was just, that was my career. It was a lot of evaluations and checks, and you felt really good in one moment and really down in another, and just trying to stay level headed through it all.
I'm sure Joseph's going through some of that right now as well. I'm just saying, man, what can I get back to what I was? Is that coming? Is my body going to get right? We'll see what Gonzalo Pineda does in this game. The sub was Jackson Conway, by the way, in the match against DC. And, of course, Marcelino Moreno with the goal later on. Thiago Almada, one to watch in this one. Should be a fun game. I'm hoping Karol Swiderski's on the field. That makes Charlotte fun, no doubt about it. Last national TV game of the weekend, Austin, Minnesota, FS1, Fox Deportes, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You got Sebastian Driussi, Emmanuel Reynoso, possible MVP candidates going head-to-head in this one. Minnesota below the playoff line. Haven't talked a ton about them this year. Any takes other than, at least on my part, I still am sort of waiting for them to, I don't think that they are getting the best out of,
well, I think,
I don't think they're getting the best out of the attacking talent that they have, which is very good. Fragapane, Lode, whoever they choose to go up top.
Or Hassani Dotson. I mean, you can go down the list.
Dotson got to meg someone last week, so I think he was happy about that. I would say what was frustrating to me against Seattle, in this game in Seattle, were really good, was when Minnesota was in the attacking third, there's only ever one run. People aren't recycling runs. There's not second and third runs to, after defense has shifted, pull things out. And I think that was what was tough about that performance, is like, yeah, when they play out of the back or win the ball back in transition, you hit Reynoso, you try and get him to beat someone, and then you get out on the run. After that moment, there doesn't seem to be a lot of cohesive ideas of what's next. And that's where you see NYCFC, Seattle starting to create chance after chance, is those second and third runs, recycling runs, moving defenders a second time, a third time, and continuing to push at it. It does really fall on, how's Reynoso going to pick this defense apart by himself? And that's, as you said, not getting the best out of a ton of talent on this team. And there aren't a ton of new pieces to it, because Amarillo had been there, but you're hoping as the season goes along, that gets better.
All right, let's hit our quickly here our ESPN Plus games of the week, and we'll get into the mailbag, get out of here. I'll get us started. I wanted to take Philly-Columbus, and I got something for you on that in a second, Dave. I'll take New York-Montreal, 4 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. I thought Alistair Johnson had some interesting quotes this week that I saw out there about, you know, people ask him, hey, you know, hey, you guys don't, you're scoring a lot of goals, but you don't have a Vela, you don't have a Chicharito, the El Trafico narrative just seeping into the water there for Montreal. He said, hold on, we have Georgie, who I think is going to be an MVP candidate, a very real one at the end of this year. That's not going out on a limb, I don't think. Georgi Mihailovic is that good right now. Montreal had a slow start to the season. You can blame it on CCL. You can blame it on injuries. They had issues with both. But this is an opportunity at a good New York team to make a little bit of a statement here and see what they can do. So that's my ESPN Plus game of the week. Dave, I gave yours away. Union Columbus, 6 p.m. Eastern on Saturday.
It's the best team in MLS, in the Philadelphia Union. They're sitting in first place, but they've been there all season. Now, obviously, they don't have to deal with CCL this year, so it changes it a little bit. And I think Seattle and NYCFC would be teams in that convo if they weren't dealing with CCL, but that doesn't take away anything from Philly. They know who they are. Goss Theorem, great year. Had him in my Golden Boot draft as well. Loving everything I'm seeing from him.
Does Julian Carranza get Goss Theorem?
Potentially second year in the league, third year in the league.
Yeah,
COVID shifted things and sort of threw things off as well.
They don't really count. By the way, Jim Curtin says in this press this morning that we've been waiting for the Ura Carranza pairing. Quote, we're going to see it this game. Nice. It's time. It's time.
So it's exciting. And for those guys, what better team can you come into to a team that has already established eight guys behind you who have played together, won together, all of them are arguably the top five at their position in this league. So it's a really good platform for them to come off of. And on the flip side for Columbus, it's sort of been up and down over the course of this season. And Arthur has helped a ton with their ability to press and create chances that way. But they're still a team that needs to create chances dominating possession. And they need a center forward to be a part of that. And they're still trying to figure out who that is. You think it's Brenner, Charlie? You think they pick up Brenner?
No.
That's good.
No, that's a great shout for that match.
Davies.
Yeah, I'm going to go Nashville. Sporting Kansas City, Nashville.
Classic Charlie. Sporting loves Kansas City. SKC.
Yeah, just a big KC
three L's in the past four matches. Three L's. Nashville playing on the road till they're season opens up at home May 1st.
I think they sold all their tickets already. They like put them on sale and I think they were gone.
All their single game tickets were sold out in an hour.
I think they have a ton of season ticket holders too. So
that one win for Sporting Kansas City came at home to RSL, and so now they're at home against Nashville, and Nashville are just kind of biding their time because they know they're about to have a whole sloth of home games. So
sloth. I just want to ask: is sloth the
sloth
slew?
Yeah.
Like what? You combined something there. I like it. Like I'm gonna start using it. Like I got a whole sloth of things on my to do list. I don't know if I'm gonna.
So I think this is gonna be
it's a good game,
a good matchup. Yeah,
good game. Sporting KC Nashville, 8:30 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. This is Week 6. All the coverage MLSsoccer.com and the MLS app, and we will be back on Monday to break it all down, as always. Plus, MLS After Dark over the weekend. Twitter Spaces live on Saturday and Sunday nights. And then that comes out on the MLS Today podcast feed as well. So if you're looking for instant breakdown, need something on Monday morning, that's what you'll get onto. Mailbag 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. First topic, I had a lot of people hitting us up about the Nations League draw. U.S. national team is in Group D. U.S., El Salvador, Grenada, and then Canada got Group C, Honduras, and Curacao with them. Mexico, Jamaica, Suriname, and then Costa Rica, Panama, and Martinique in Group B. Interesting that Panama and Costa Rica got paired together. Charlie, what do you think of this group for the U.S.? Well, they'll play El Salvador and Grenada in June. Two games that will be used as World Cup tune-up. How do you think they should use those games? How much does the Nations League matter to the U.S.?
The U.S. are going to use them like World Cup qualifiers because they have to. There's not many opportunities for the group to get together. So for Greg, it's I got to play my best 11 and figure out the best team, the best partnerships and pairings. And it's a lot of small changes from what we've seen in World Cup qualifying, because It's always going to come down to form and relationships on the field. And so you're going to have some late bloomers in terms of guys who are just like getting hot and like screaming, hey, I deserve a national team call up for the World Cup, versus the guys that Greg's has known throughout the World Cup qualifying process. So balancing which player makes sense versus I got to stick with some of the guys that have done it for us and I can depend on.
Sounds like Uruguay is going to be a friendly opponent, Dave.
Yeah,
you like that?
I do.
As a prep?
I like that a lot. I just think just play the best teams you can. And this Nations League will be sort of your comparison for having a lot of the ball against a Wales, Scotland, or Ukraine, whoever it ends up being. Otherwise, challenge yourself against great teams. Challenge yourself against teams like England. I'd like to see them play Belgium if possible. I think that makes a lot of sense for them. And on Belgium for the flip side.
Holland for me.
You want to see them play Holland? Yeah, I think that's fair as well. There's rumors potentially about Argentina because Mexico and Argentina had a friendly. And today, a report came out that Copa America, there's a discussion that it will return to the U.S. in 2024, which I think we're not going to talk about this until after. But the next 4 years, what is the U.S., Mexico, and Canada going to do without World Cup qualifying? That's a really good solution to getting yourself prepared for a World Cup.
I know we have to go. Andres says we have to go. Dave, I guess, like walk away or something real quick. I just want to read this and get your thoughts, Charlie. Aloha, team. It's Nick from Honolulu. He doesn't understand all the praise for Jesus Ferreira in our last podcast. He says he understands he got the goal, but the ball accidentally got to him in an obvious spot to score, and he missed a clear chance from a pass by Luca De La Torre. He says we have short memory with our number nines. We loved Pepe. Then Pepe was cast aside. PFOC was scoring. Then we cast him aside because he had the miss. But Ferreira scores one goal out of several chances. And now he's the clear number nine. That doesn't make sense to Nick. And James Porter hit us up and said he thinks we are overlooking Timothy Weah at the nine. I would just ask you, Charlie, for your top three U.S. national team center forward depth chart as it stands right now.
As it stands right now, Timothy Weah, Ricardo Pepe, and in no particular order.
That's like the opposite of the. That's not what a depth chart.
So you're top. My number one guy right now, who I'm playing, it would be Timothy Weah. Be my nine right now.
No.
Okay.
Ricardo Pepe is number two for me, and three would be Jesus Ferreira at the moment.
Well, I guess we end on that note. You can yell at us. You can hit us up in the mailbag, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Pleasure to be back with you boys. We'll be back on Monday. Caitlin and Doyle with Dave and I breaking down week six. If you have thoughts on that, hit us up. Have a great weekend, everybody. Adios.